For the week of January 24th, 2013, we talk about arcades, Kentucky Route Zero, and Kart Life. Welcome to the Ninth Level. My name's Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
David Meismith.
Ben Merkel.
And this is the Ninth Level. Here, it's a podcast about video games. Thank you so much for your patience. Last week, I was traveling, unable to record or edit a show, but Dennis and Ben decided to make our first bonus level.
I was going to say, you edited a show.
I did edit it. It was a
speed run.
It was a WAF speed run. I think it clocked in at a minute 42, which might be the shortest thing we've ever put out over the feed.
It's true. And it even had a bonus level at the end of it.
Yes, it did.
It's a bonus level.
Yeah, it is wheels within wheels.
It's a Charlie Kaufman level.
Did you just call the network the feed?
No, like any of the feed, just digging on it, just audio blogging, it's one of those things,
Just put an excellent nickname for duckfeed.tv. I kind of like that
now. Putting up a pod blast on the feed, right?
See, is it the feed, or since it's duckfeed, can we shorten it to the feed?
The feed.
The feed.
The feed TV.
The podcast on the feed.
Yeah. I don't like this anymore. Let's stop. The brief. We talk about game news. Does anybody want to volunteer to go first? Because I have one that is sad.
I've got one that's happy.
I likely have a similar sad one. I did want to contribute one to one you did last time, the Steam Box.
Yes.
One of the things you guys didn't mention is apparently they're thinking about making it upgradable so that... they haven't said the specifics, but, conceivably, say, once a year, something like that, you could, they could release, the next version of the Steam Box where, pop in new memory, new process, or whatever.
Okay.
So, do you think that could potentially change things if, say, two-thirds of the way through the development cycle, all the other systems are still in the previous generation, while Steam is already a next gen system.
I'm not sure. Yeah, they definitely have a faster iteration cycle on this thing. So just to get people up to speed, Valve came out and said, hey, we want to release a PC that is like a console. It solely runs Steam, runs on Linux, but you can install Windows if you want. And it's our way of getting our stuff into the living room. That could definitely speed up that cycle. I'm wondering that's something that happens already. Like, how many versions of DirectX have come out since the Xbox came out?
True, but it's really, I think the difference is though that if it was something that was official, this is the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. What I would ask you as kind of the person who is most PC oriented, to get your opinion since you weren't in on that episode, what do you think of that as like a thing, the Steam Box? Like, would you just be like, okay, I'm not gonna upgrade my own thing anymore, just gonna buy this, then it'll be here.
See, I don't know. I mean, two of the biggest things I like about PC gaming is the fact that I have a mouse and keyboard and that it's not on the TV because I don't use my TV for anything because I have Netflix.
Right.
So I feel like that would take away both the convenience and the keyboard aspect. On the other hand, I feel like, there are a number of games, most notably recently Shank, that are probably better with a controller that I don't really have access to. So if this brought the controller into the PC for the couple of genres, mostly action and racing, where it's superior, I think that'd be good.
Mm-hmm.
I think the real thing that would be nice is if if this could bring some of the kind of force the console manufacturers to be a little more open with their system the way PCs are. I think then this could potentially be good for video gaming as a whole.
I think the open thing, we can't get into that because that is such a huge discussion. And I just, you know, if I said my piece on that, it would probably start a huge thing. So let's table that for right now. But yeah, just the mode of interaction and kind of like, you know, like your physical relationship with that screen. You know, it's a big deal. So let's see here. So thank you for the update on that. But that being upgradable it has tones of like the RAM chip for the N64.
Yes.
So I'm calling it right now. This is my speculation. This is my rumor. Donkey Kong 64 on Steam. speaking of things that were only relevant in the late 90s, Blockbuster is closing 300 of their U.S. stores.
Wait, there was more than 300?
I know, I was going to say, the real surprise here is that is a 100% of stores. 300, parentheses, all. No, this actually, it kind of sucks, because, like, you know, you lose about 3,000 jobs, most of them people who Dish Network, who apparently owns Blockbuster, they bought Blockbuster in 2011, which so there are going to be 500 Blockbuster stores left in the United States, which means that there will be 10 for every single state, which is weird.
It's like the black mark for all the different towns, like, don't go there. They still have Blockbuster.
Yeah. which Denny's are you going to? The good one or the bad? Yeah, exactly. The one by the Blockbuster. I hear it's got ghosts. By which I mean the movie 13 Ghosts. Yeah. So I don't know. Just in the, you know, over the past year when I've been playing more, you know, old games, just as a matter of, you know, doing this network and, you know, doing these shows, thinking about like how many times I was exposed to games, especially back in the SNES and N64 days, when games were, you know, $80 a pop. Just like, you know, how wonderful it was to go to the Kmart or occasionally the Blockbuster, but that was across town with my grandma or my stepdad, and, you know, getting my rental for the weekend and playing that. You know, so I just like, on one hand, it's kind of like, progress, bitch. It sucks. But on the other hand, it's kind of like, oh, you know, it's quaint. Like the dollar store, or not the dollar store. There are plenty of those. Like the general store on the corner where you would go to buy your nails and get some wisdom.
Yeah. Just think of how many of today's games, though, would be totally messed up by that. Like, there would be no reason to ever buy... like Portal 2, even though Portal 2 is a great game, because you could easily rent it and beat it in like a day and a half.
Yeah, but like, even when I had access to games and did rentals, I like to buy games to own them, you know? Mm-hmm. So I just like, I think that that's always been the case. There have always been short games. You know, I don't think the games are by and large getting shorter. And you know, the majority of the games that make money now, they're, you know, your Call of Duties. They're, you know, it's the multiplayer component, right?
Yeah. You know what's ironic is literally just this week, for the first time I wanted to rent a game. I wanted to play Spec Ops The Line. I wasn't really interested in the multiplayer. Mm-hmm. I heard you get through it in about 7 hours. And so I was like, man, I need a Blockbuster, and could not for the life of me.
Yeah. Yeah.
The one time I need them, and they just go and close everything.
Yeah.
The one time somebody needed them.
Yeah. I don't know. So,
Poor Blockbuster.
Poor Blockbuster. It's kind of sucks. So 3,000 jobs from closing 300 stores. So each Blockbuster on average only employed 10 people.
That sounds about right.
That's yeah, I guess.
Is that not counting like all the people that kind of just turn over? It strikes me as a place that's got very high turnover.
Yeah.
How much did like a GameStop have?
Like five people.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I guess that makes sense. Just 10 seems so low. Yeah. I don't know. Who wants to do another story?
I've got one.
Okay.
It's just a game I'm excited for that's coming out tomorrow, I believe, which is
a couple days ago when you're here.
Yeah, a couple days ago when you've read this. But The Cave is coming out, which is the next game from Ron Gilbert. Well, can we call him friend of the network? Probably.
Oh, yeah. Our drinking buddy.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Old Ronnie boy, as we call him.
my future kid's godfather.
Right.
or God Ron, yes.
God Ron.
Yeah. Slightly uncomfortable.
Yeah. But, you know, just one of gaming's few auteurs that his fingerprints are really all over any game he makes, and he leaves a very clear voice or style on anything he touches. He did Maniac Mansion. He did, all of the Monkey Island stuff. And now he's done The Cave, which is, very much like his other adventure games, except it is in a 2D platformer format. And it has, absolutely crazy time travel puzzle stuff in it.
Cool.
Yeah, and it just from what I've been reading, it seems really cool. Like, if you want to get rid of someone who's your rival at work, you go back in time and kill their caveman ancestor. the most effective way. Or, like you kill a dinosaur in the past so you can find oil in the future. Like, yeah, that sort of stuff.
Nice.
Can you imagine what America's energy policy would look like?
That's funny. I like to go into games blind, but that sounds an awful lot like an excellent adventure game that I'm going to mention now because it's apropos of the discussion. Time Gentlemen, Please.
Time Gentlemen, Please.
Is the please part of the title?
Yes. It's more appropriately Time Gentlemen, Please. Because there's a comma and exclamation mark. It's a sequel to Been There, Dan That, and it uses kind of similar, similar things.
Interesting.
But what's the news story here besides Thing Exists?
I guess Thing Exists, but also I found I wanted to just choose to talk about a game I haven't played.
Soon. Okay. You're honest.
Thing Exists. Right.
Way to bully him into that one, Cole. Right.
I think it's the other thing that I've heard about it is that it's got a really interesting just juxtaposition of art style and theme, that it's actually a very dark game, but it's, it's got a kind of a bright cartoony style.
Okay.
Also, it is dramatically different depending on the characters that you play through it with. There are 7 characters and you can only choose 3 at a time, meaning that you have to play through the game at least 3 times to get the full story.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a multiplayer adventure game, in that you can have a different player controlling each of the 3 characters.
Right.
That sounds kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good on you, Ron.
Thank you, God, Ron. Yeah. So pertinent details. That is a thing. It exists. It came out on Wednesday of this week. It's available on most platforms for $15 or their Space Bucks equivalent. And I fully intend to play it. In fact, I was a little bit heartbroken that it wasn't out on Xbox today, because otherwise I would have done that instead of playing the shitty thing that I,
Oh, foreshadowing. Played. Foreshadowing.
It's nothing new. So.
Whoa, you really turned on Dark Souls.
That seems like a pretty good segue, Cole.
Do you have a story?
I do.
Okay, go ahead. No.
And this one is time. I don't. This is appropriate for the time right now as well. So mine is also about another game that, after I talk about it, we know will exist.
We liked it before it was cool.
Yeah. But it's a game by Konami. Buzzword. It's the new Metal Gear game, which we probably all knew about anyway. Metal Gear Rising Revengeance.
Yes.
That's a word, right? Sure.
Why not?
Die Hard level, like, names of games.
Yeah. Oh, well. The demo came out today.
Oh, did it? Huh.
It did. And the game itself is coming out February 19th? 19th.
That's yes. crazy. That's that's being developed by Platinum?
Yes. It's not a true Hideo Kojima child, I guess.
It's not a Kojima joint.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
But in addition to the demo, there's some videos that came out today. I'll put the link in the notes, or Cole will do that. But it shows scenes of, for example, Raiden attacking a helicopter and kicking it.
Wait, so it really is Die Hard.
It's something.
But boy, is it something.
They're really letting the Japanese wear on its sleeve, I guess. I don't know. So you can look at the links at your leisure, or you can download the demo and play it. But
Did you download the demo and play it?
No, I do not have my PS3.
Ah, okay. So,
why?
It's in somewhere between Cincinnati and Las Vegas right now.
Okay. Oh man, movers.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've got to be honest. I just now, forever after, will imagine Las Vegas as like Fallout New Vegas style.
Oh yeah.
I really want to play that game now again. After being here,
You need to get familiar with the city and then play the game and see if they were faithful at all to the layout.
If they're faithful at all to the layout in the 50s when it was like a quarter of the size.
Yeah, I was going to say everything's kind of shrunk down a little bit, but it is faithful to the geography of the region.
Hmm. You know what's creepy is GTA 4 was basically really faithful to New York. And then the trailer for Watch Dogs, which is the PS3 exclusive coming out, it's set in Chicago, and I knew it was in Chicago well before they ever said anything. Just as it was like panning around random streets, I was like, holy crap, I've been there. I've seen that before. And so the Watch Dogs is a very faithful reproduction of Chicago.
Huh.
Even just like the minute details, which is really, really cool.
Do you know when that's coming out?
I don't know that it's been announced yet. They showed it the last E3. It was like the big surprise. And I don't know that they've said much about it since. I could be totally wrong about that, though.
Yeah, I thought that was going to be next gen. But, yeah. So Kojima came out and said that Revengeance wasn't originally supposed to star Raiden. He wanted it to star Gray Fox.
Really? Who is Gray Fox?
Gray Fox is the cyborg ninja from the first game.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So it's supposed to be a prequel.
Raiden's the girly man?
Yeah. Who apparently can slash helicopters in half.
The grind.
The grind?
Why not?
Let's do it.
Make some sparks.
Let's grind it. I like that.
Yeah. Let's do it. Let's grind this down to a nub. I don't know about any of that. We play games, don't we? That's the thing we do.
Wait, is your cat going after the beer?
Sorry, my cat just wandered into the room.
Sorry, my cat is a raging alcoholic.
Do you know how much I've had to resist that urge? Don't tempt me.
To feed your cat beer?
Yeah.
Like,
well,
you would
have to do something stronger. Well, no, beer might be the strongest thing it would drink.
No, just imagine though, cat with a hangover.
No, you get a traffic cone and you put it over the cat and you blow pot smoke in there. Like you don't give him beer. Are you fucked in the head? No,
we're horrible people. We are horrible people.
So anyway, has anybody been playing any new hotness?
I can go first because I have one tiny little thing.
Okay.
So since, as we mentioned before, I do not have my PS3, it's kind of hard to play video games. That situation will correct itself in a week's time, but. I guess for those who don't know, I just recently moved from Cincinnati to Las Vegas, so things are kind of in transition. But one of the things I was able to do the last week was go to the Pinball Hall of Fame.
Ooh.
Have you guys heard of the Pinball Hall of Fame?
No.
No.
I had not heard of it until I went to Las Vegas. But it's totally awesome. I went there over the weekend. It's a bunch of old and new pinball machines, as well as some arcade machines. So, for instance, they have the original Tetris, they have the original Super Mario, they have the original Pac-Man, Miss Pac-Man, Donkey Kong, things like that. And that's only one row of machines. In addition to that, they have a bunch of pinball machines, as mm-hmm. the name would indicate. It's all owned by one dude. It's a nonprofit. So all the quarters that people put into the machines go to paying rent, and all the surplus goes to the Salvation Army.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah. And so it opens up at like 11 a.m. on a Saturday. And so I got there right at 11. I just happened to work out that way. But yeah, like not long after they opened, just people came pouring in, and I brought a roll of quarters with me, and they had a lot of choice pinball machines. They had a Judge Dredd one, they had a Jurassic Park one, they had a Star Wars one, they had several Batman ones. My favorite pinball machine that I played while I was there was the recent Batman Trilogy pinball machine, just because there's a Christian Bale voice-alike who does stuff for the machine. And so you get to hear somebody say jackpot over and over again in a Christian Bale voice. And
I won't do it unless somebody asks me to.
Jackpot! So. We should all do it. Try it out.
I swear to bumpers.
Where's the multi-ball? Yeah. So I put a link. I sent it to you guys. You can check it out if you want. But
hold on. I got one more. I never said replay,
and you'll never have to.
Did they have the Twilight Zone one by chance? That one was
scary. I don't know. I don't remember seeing it, but they had a lot.
Did they have the Addams Family one?
Oh, yes.
I don't think they did. They did have a Guns N' Roses one, however. Because we all love that band. Yeah, they had some pretty awesome ones, though.
Yeah.
Actually, as a kind of really convenient segue, I was just in a bar with a AC/DC pinball machine, as well as several other retro game arcade cabinets.
Okay.
What bar is this that you're talking about?
This is the Emporium Arcade in Chicago.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't want to cut Ben off. Did you have anything else, or?
That's all I've been grinding on.
Okay, that was the proper time to segue. I read it right then. Our chemistry has been good, Ben.
Segue, success!
Yeah.
You know what's great for segues?
Hmm.
Calling him out.
Running off a mountain?
Yeah, calling him out. That was a deep burn, David. In a meeting today, my boss said, was like, you know, making a point, and he was like, so I'm going to segue over to Dennis, and then just looked at me.
Does he know?
I really just wanted to stop and be like, that's your segue? Really?
Nailed it.
But, you know, my general manager was in the room, and, you know, I wasn't sure if that would be appropriate.
You have to at least use a pun. Like, yeah. That's the minimum.
Oh, yeah. All right, anyway, so yeah, the Emporium Arcade in Chicago, I totally came on it by chance. Was out there visiting a friend, and we were just going out on Milwaukee Avenue, which actually is the second best place to go out after the Magnificent Mile. And it is a really cool kind of strip of bars or something for everyone. And she was like, oh, hey, Dennis, I just thought of a place you might like, and walked across the street, and there it was, the Emporium Arcade. Let me tell you, this gave me hope. If anyone who says the arcade is dying needs to go to this place, because it was so packed, it was hard to move. Absolutely amazing. And not a single modern game cabinet in the place. Right. Like, it was all, like, they had everything, like Centipede, Missile Defense, Donkey Kong, Pac-Man, Miss Pac-Man, the original X-Men, the Simpsons game.
Yeah.
100 other things I'm not thinking of right now. The original NBA Jam, Duck Hunt, which I didn't even know had an arcade version.
Mm-hmm, it did.
Arcade version. A thousand others that I'm forgetting. but like, and then just wall to wall filled with people all playing these games. Every game was a quarter. Like, it wasn't one of those crappy, you know, arcades where everything is, you know, $2.50 to play, which is really nice. Yeah. which I, you know, I thought was really cool. And then on top of that, everyone was super nice and took turns. Like, it was just a very collaborative atmosphere, mm-hmm. Which was surprising. So I found out that the friend I was visiting was a NBA Jam savant.
Would you say that he was on fire?
No.
And he lived in downtown.
But she apparently had it in her homeroom in high school, and that was like what she did because she didn't feel like watching the movies or studying or whatever. So
yeah,
we did me and Jen versus her, and just we got schooled. But that was kind of fun, mm-hmm. and it was just a great experience overall. We were, you know, we were taking turns playing a pinball machine, Transformers one, funny enough, and. First off, it was kind of funny because I would kind of get, you know, do all right and kind of get all the multipliers, you know, ready to go, all the multi-balls and everything. And then the other two would play, and they would get all the cool stuff that I was building up towards and then reset nice. Everything for me to start again. So I didn't get to do anything cool. They got to do all the cool stuff. Yeah. But yeah. We finished a game and a person was standing behind us and we were like, oh, hey, do you want to, you know, are you next? Do you want to go? And they're like, oh, no, just keep on, you know, keep on playing. You look like you're having fun. I was like, wow, I don't know of any bar or arcade where people would voluntarily do that, yeah. especially when it is packed shoulder to shoulder in the place. So that was just a really cool experience.
Yeah.
Completely unexpected.
I'd like to submit a recommendation for a future multiplayer, by the way, favorite arcade game.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. That was definitely one of my favorite things about going out to Portland. It was very much, you know, geared around that, you know, around kind of the arcade stuff. But yeah, that's it's great when you can find someplace like that, especially when there's alcohol available.
Oh,
so, yeah.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
So much better at skee ball after.
Aren't we all? So then in your more conventional video game department, I played Darksiders, which is kind of the God of War clone where you play as War. You know, forget all that God
Bucket
of...
Bucket of fish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Forget all that God of stuff. You're just War. Mm-hmm. It's a really, really kind of interesting concept, playing as one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. The game overall is pretty solid. It feels to me like it kind of squanders an opportunity to do something different than God of War. You know, it's right now it very much feels like a clone, and that's not at all a bad thing, mind you. Like, not at all bad, but it's nothing noteworthy, at least to this point. I'm still fairly early in the game.
Right. I own it. I've played like the first dungeon or so. It's good. It's a solid game. I mean, like can you knock like the combat?
No, not at all. It's fun. I think that's what keeps me going is, you know, it doesn't really serve up anything too different from God of War, but the moment to moment of the game is fun. Mm-hmm. Which keeps you going. Hmm. Yeah. So that's a thing. I think it's interesting though that that whole setting, you know, if I look at Greek mythology versus, I don't know what you call that, end times mythos or something like that.
Revelations, yeah.
Yeah, that kind of thing. I feel like, you know, Greek mythology is a little bit more of a touchstone where people, you know, people might not really understand everything that goes behind, you know, Cerberus or the Hydra or, you know, whatever, but they still recognize it. Whereas I feel that the whole Revelation mythos has a lot of stuff that's really cool and interesting, but people just don't know it, so it's not as relatable.
Right.
But it's still kind of a cool setting, nonetheless.
Yeah. I mean, and that's very much like, you know, there's a little bit of technical stuff to it, too. You know, so it's, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. More stuff with you know.
For all those game developers out there, you got to make the end of times relatable.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then final thing, I tried playing Mega Man 9.
Operative word being tried.
So hearkening to the whole Greek mythology thing, I felt like Sisyphus playing this, where I just, you know, kept on pushing and pushing and getting close to the end and then dying and starting over, and then pushing and pushing and getting to the boss and then dying and starting over, and then getting to the boss, but then not really doing anything and starting over. And, you know, I guess trial and error, or, you know, kind of learning something, learning a level isn't always a bad thing, but and I don't know if all Mega Man games are this way, but it's just long enough that you have to backtrack and get through again, that it was unfun. So I don't know if maybe, you know, I'm sure there's a great game and a great series of games there, but I just didn't connect with it.
Yeah, it's, you know, I would really just recommend going back and playing like Mega Man 2 or something if you're wanting to get the actual experience. Like, I wouldn't judge Mega Man based on Mega Man 9 or 10, you know, any of those. Like go back and play 2, 3, and 4, I think. If you're looking for that, because 9 is very much in that retro sense, you know, RETRAUX, you know, faux retro, and they're trying to take up like what people think is good about Mega Man, you know, where they
which apparently is being balls hard.
Yeah, but like that's not the case, you know, like it's like there's that challenge, but it's the, you know, the reward needs to be there. And from what I found in 9 and 10, the reward was just like saying, oh, you did it. Whereas in, you know, those really great Mega Man games, it was like the reward is being able to see more of this awesome thing, you know?
Yeah. Do they all kind of have I know all of them, their trademark is that all the levels are available right at the beginning.
Yeah.
Do they all have a pretty specific order that you have to play them in, though?
Yeah, well, I mean, like, you don't have to do anything. You know, it's your choice, man. You don't have to do anything in a particular order. It just helps if you do them in the order that the weakness goes in.
Okay.
So like you benefit from having that and knowing that. But you can totally beat everything with just the Mega Buster. It just makes it easier.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. I kind of was, like I said, really struggling with it. And so I kind of looked up a FAQ, and they said like, there is definitely a right order to play these in. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, then why make them all available from the start?
Yeah.
You know, but well, you know,
it just helps you find it out.
Do they indicate
like I need to go back to the originals?
Do they indicate the order that you should play them in?
No, like in the early games, it was easy to like kind of suss it out, like what was like what it was, especially when the enemies had elemental affinities. You know, it's kind of like, oh, Iceman would you have Fireman's weapon probably works really good on Iceman. You know, then it, like when they started getting like Trash Man, okay, what's Trash good against? You know, it gets a little bit weird. So you can intuit
some of it. Man.
Exactly. They have like Magda Man for some reason. I forget what his thing, weaknesses, except for bad music, because his music was great. Magda Man's music was. So like sometimes you can intuit it, but other times just kind of like it's one of those things that is relegated to schoolyard lore, you know, just kind of like people talking. And going and, you know,
So that's what I've been, that's my grind.
I see. Want me to do mine, or David, do you have something that is huge to talk about?
I've got, I guess, a couple of fairly small things.
Okay.
I think I've pretty much, I played a little, but I think I've pretty much decided I'm done with, Dead Island. The game always kind of came across like they're kind of trying to make the characters out to be assholes, but there wasn't actually enough storyline for me to be sure. But I guess spoilers, but eventually, basically in the game, the only likable character in this story naively tries to share some food with some a group of thugs, and the game implies basically gets kidnapped and raped. And your characters, when you eventually rescue her, just kind of express anger at her for stealing your food. And it's at that point where I'm kind of like, yeah, we're done here.
Yep.
I think we've seen enough.
Later, dudes.
If that wasn't bad enough, did you see the controversy over their special edition?
Well, and see, that's the thing. The special edition of the game, of the next version, or the pseudo expansion of the game, I guess, comes up with, is it just like a statue of this like dismembered corpse?
Dismembered corpse slash like bikini babe body.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
What? Like the whole game, you know, I kind of have this feeling, but like I said, the story, there's really no storyline. So I always, you know, kind of assumed, oh, it's just, you know, they're trying to make it dark and gritty and stuff like that. But there's just not enough storyline to get it actually together. But then seeing that, you know, special edition thing in this part, I kind of like, no, they're just kind of immature.
Yeah.
Video at least games? What are video games? I've never heard of those things. I do not affiliate myself with that at all. It's so weird. I just wow. That's horrifying. Who would ever think that was a good thing? Wow.
It's really weird. So, on the bright side, got back to Planet Side. Again,
nice. Planet Side 2 or the original?
Planet Side 2. It's basically like ultra large scale Battlefield 3 with like random sci-fi jump jets for everybody and giant robots and crap.
Okay.
So it's really cool. It, you know, it gets the good things about Battlefield 3, which is like getting in like a drop ship or a troop transport with like your crew and going somewhere and like all loading out and, you know, everyone having their roles and taking over stuff. It's definitely got that going on. The only problem I see is it just doesn't seem to be able to get the density of good experiences. So like the vast majority of the time, it's like you get to a base, kill the five people within it, and then like, you know, sit there for like 10 minutes, you know, killing any respawns and capturing the base.
Okay.
So it's, you know, it's one of those things where like when it's good, it's good. It's just they haven't quite gotten the handle on making it consistently good.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, is that just a matter of like people don't know how to play it right or what?
I'm not sure. Honestly, I think the two things I've been able to kind of feel out is, one, just it's a huge world, so there's a certain degree to which, you know, most of the time, unless two sides happen to have high populations playing at the same time, where they're coordinated enough to, like, drop ship people in to do a fight, it's often you just figure out who's not on at the time and take all their stuff.
Right.
But also, I think you die. I feel like you die too fast in it. In that, you know, I feel like there's kind of a fine line in a first person shooter where if your health is too low, you generally, you know, when you get killed, it's just, you know, you get killed before you can react and it's not fun and you don't really learn anything.
Right.
And if your health is too high, which I would compare to Planet Side 1 was kind of like this, and I kind of feel like Team Fortress is like this, you know, you almost never, it's hard to actually finish the deal and get a kill, so you never get that feedback and don't learn anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's definitely a balancing act, but I feel like it's kind of too low. So, you know, most of the time when you get to a battle, it's either A, you instantly kill off the other guy, or like the other guy comes out of nowhere and kills you off. So battles aren't protracted at all.
Right.
And then also, it's really, really vehicle focused right now. So it tends to be whoever gets the vehicles there first wins.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I forget. Is this a free to play one? Or
yeah.
Is it,
yeah.
Okay. How's their microtransaction structure work?
Basically, you can buy things that make you level up faster, things that make you look different, and then you can just straight up buy new weapons, but you can also unlock them in-game. But then all of your attachments and player, like you're leveling the skill tree, you have to get in-game.
Sounds pretty
reasonable. So it seems pretty reasonable. The only two things I really don't like is, one, I hate the free-to-play point thing. You know, just tell me that to get this new game or new weapon, it's $1.50. Don't do this whole, oh, it's 700 points, but we'll only sell you in increments of 1,000 points.
Yeah. It's the space bucks problem, right?
The what?
The space bucks problem. You know, Microsoft comes out and says, yeah, that'll be 800 points. You mean $10? Yeah, 800 points. Why not? Like any layer of abstraction that you can put in there, to make people not think about the dollars that they're spending. Like, it just the psychology there is grossly obvious, but it works somehow. See also, you know, $9.99 or, you know, at gas, you know, there are, it's $3.21.09. Like, yeah, just pricing psychology. Dennis, you probably know more about that than I do, but.
Yeah. Or if you go to any casino, they use chips and debit cards now.
Yep.
Yeah. I was going to say, I wonder if there's almost a counter movement ready to go, that the first free to play being like, all right, bullshit, it's a dollar. People will be like, yes, I appreciate that. I'm going to spend it with you.
Yeah.
Team Fortress 2.
That's like one thing that I really like about PSN over Xbox Live is that stuff is just like, yep, this is $5.99. Awesome. I want to pay you this money. I want to, you know, not have to load up with, you know, with a wallet full of space bucks, you know, like that $3 or the, sorry, 300 points of Wii cash that is just sitting there, never, ever to be redeemed on my account, that can't even be like carried over to a different system. So thank you, womp Nintendo. Womp. Yeah. Womp indeed.
And some, this is even worse because you can only buy the points in certain increments. So it's almost like if Walmart said, you know, hey, you can buy whatever you want, but you can only pay in $20 bills.
Yeah. Yeah. Man.
Oh, sorry.
No, I was just lamenting. Yeah.
The last thing, and I just got it installed yesterday, but I finally re-got my copy of Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines. So far so good. The gameplay definitely, I mean, it's an old game and it was a little bit clunky even when it was built. So the gameplay is a little bit whatever, but I mean the sort of, I don't know, I guess it's almost like, what if we either A, just took the exploration parts of Skyrim, or B, like made an adventure game 3D type of thing is really cool. I do have to call out, I now realize why video games generally make doors open both ways.
Mm-hmm. because in this game, they don't.
Right, and as soon as they bump into you, when they open towards you, they automatically close.
Yep.
I'm playing with the fan patch. Have you done anything with that?
Yes, when we played it for Watch Out for Fireballs, we just was what we did.
Did you use the plus version?
I don't even know.
Basically, you know, they did a fan patch where they fixed the crap ton of bugs that were left in, but then they there's a plus version where basically they went through and re-enabled a whole bunch of like partially developed things and completed and stuff like that, and also rebalanced a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So, pretty good. The only concern I have, I hate the whole like limited XP thing. I just don't like that.
That's where like you don't get actual XP that you get. You have like talent points that you can get. I forget the exact implementation. Anybody who knows anything about the World of Darkness was screaming at me now. But
And the thing is, you only get experience basically for completing missions, which means there's a finite amount of experience. Most notably, all of the like access skills like hacking and lockpicking take experience. So it's kind of like, you know, I don't know. I just don't like being in a situation where it's like, oh, bet you wish you built your character different.
Yeah. I mean, Deus Ex handled that much better. The original one did, and they're both games of a very similar stripe. So it's hard not to like make a comparison about that.
Right.
Yeah.
So going with the like wolf vampire thing where I can randomly like grow claws and slash people to death.
Why not?
Yeah. So.
Huh. Neat. Yeah, that's a good game. I really like it. It's, you know, it's one of those ones where you need to cheat with reckless abandon, you know, for laughs. But yeah, it's fantastic, and it runs okay on your machine.
Yeah. It's fine. I did want to get some feedback. Do you think the book cheat where you sell the book to the vendor and then buy it twice from them, is that cheating or is that intentional?
I don't have any idea what you're talking about.
Okay, never mind.
Yep. Yeah. So
is this in real life or a video game?
What's a book? Neat. So do you mind if I go?
Go for it.
No, this episode we actually want to exclude you.
Damn it. Every time. No. Okay. So, big one that I played, here today, just right before we hopped on, not right, maybe a couple of hours, exactly 76 minutes before we hopped on, Kentucky Route Zero, which is, an adventure game. Developed for the PC. It's being released in 5 episodes, like in kind of installments. And I think you can pre-buy the whole season and get the soundtrack for it in for like $25, I think, through the guys' website. Very small team, very, very artsy, very, very, some would call it pretentious. But yeah, it's an adventure game. It's a point and clicker. And you play as a truck driver who works for an antique shop who is trying to make a delivery to an address that apparently doesn't exist. And by talking to people, you find out that in order to get to that, you have to take Route Zero in Kentucky, which is apparently this mystical hidden highway. What's that?
Banjo music.
Well, yeah, no, like, and it's not like it doesn't leverage that. Like, you know, yeah, it's Kentucky, and there are stereotypes about like what that may or may not mean for the narrative and the style, and you know, yeah, like there's like, you know, coal mines, and you know, they're some of the music is a little bit informed by that, but in general, it's, you know, it's really tasteful. Like each of the episodes is called an act, and each of the acts has 5 scenes. And each of these 5 scenes kind of involves an exploration of a particular character or a particular setting, something like that. And kind of the writing is this really kind of surreal, like they call it magical realism, on the website, like when you go and take a look at it. But yeah, it's got this awesome, just kind of surreal, dreamlike kind of feel. The closest thing I would compare it to would be Swords and Sorcery, the Super Brothers game on the iPhone and iPad. It's a similar kind of feel to it. But I think the best thing about it, and you guys can feel free to look up screenshots. You have my permission to look up screenshots of it. The aesthetic of it is fantastic. Like it's modeled in 3D, but you know, because it's the, you know, it's these kind of like static shots, you know, it's an adventure game, so the camera isn't very active, but it does most of the stuff in kind of these monochrome silhouettes, and kind of the composition, it's just fantastic. It's wonderful to look at. The writing is incredibly nonspecific, and some of the settings are just a little bit abstract, so the game kind of comes across as more like poetry than movie or narrative book novel kind of thing. And, you know, just, we were discussing this before we started recording, but, there very much is a class of thing that, you can look at it and think like, oh, this was made specifically for me, wasn't it? And mm-hmm. everything I just described is like, oh, that's a game that Cole would like. yeah, it's really, really cool.
Yep. Good. Yeah. Almost looks like kind of a noir, film noir type of look almost.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it makes a lot of use of shadow and the lighting. Like, it's great because stuff will be monochrome, like if it's not lit, and there will be like situational lighting, and anything that's lit up will have color to it. Yeah, it's great. It's fucking great. Yeah. Are you guys curious about that? Do you have questions about it?
Is it horror?
There are elements of it that are ghost story like, but I do not want to. I don't want to spoil anything beyond saying that that is an element. Yes, it is. It is frightening, but it's frightening in the way that like this is a bad example because he does really scary movies, you know. But like it's a David Lynch kind of feel to it, you know. It's horror in the same way that Twin Peaks is horror. You know, okay. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
For like 5 years.
Go ahead. What?
Oh, sorry. Twin Peaks. I've been meaning to watch that.
It's good. You'll love it. Yeah. Yeah. So the thing that I would say that I like don't like about it too much, like he says, you know, it'll be five episodes, and you know, it'll come out over the course of a year, give or take. And I've seen this trap. I know what that looks like. Telltale has taken, you know, like they've kind of fallen into it. And know how to do it. Just kind of like, okay, episode a month, rain or shine. You know, and that worked really well for The Walking Dead. I don't hold out hope that this game is actually going to get finished.
Really?
unless enough people buy it. There's been plenty of, like, you know, people who are listening to this, if they listen to any other video game podcast, they're sick and tired of hearing about it. You know, like, unless he gets a lot of money out of it, it's just one of those things where I could see it being like, okay, 4 months later, I get a little email notification saying, hey, act two is ready. Act two of what? Oh, this thing. Awesome. I love that. And then it'll just go away and never come back. So, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's how the game ends.
Yeah, exactly. It ends with me paying, you know, $25 instead of the $7 that I should have paid for the first episode. But the I want to support this. You know, you vote with your dollars and blah, 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 blah. You also get the soundtrack for free, and it's really good. Nice ambient kind of spooky stuff. So
nice.
Yeah, yeah. It's cool. It's been quirky PC game time for me over the past 2 weeks. I forget if I talked about it. No, I did finish it since we last spoke. Hotline Miami, finished that join up. It's really good. It's great. You know, it's closer to a puzzle game than an action game in a lot of cases, because the key kind of decision that you have to make in any given level, like, you know, if you execute it, yeah, that's great. You know, your plan, but it really is looking at stuff and trying to figure out what you kill first and what weapon you use in what order. In the last leg of that game, the narrative really picks up, and it kind of fulfills some of those promises that I've heard people making about it. Just about where it would eventually go, and the ending is really satisfying. So, yeah,
is it satisfying as in a oh this has all been worth it way, or is it satisfying as in a yep this is the capstone for an entire game of feeling horrible about myself kind of way?
No comment.
fair enough.
It's a short game. I mean, like, it took me a long time to play it because, you know, you just like you either get frustrated or, you know, it's genuinely unpleasant. So you can only expose yourself to so much of it at a given time. But yeah, that's good. Try it. It'll be a good thing. Cart Life, played a little bit more of that. Nothing. nothing more to say about it really, except that it's depressing still.
Are you still playing as the same guy, or did you start as a new character?
Yeah, I'm still playing as the same guy. I'm probably going to have to either restart or go as a new person. This might be a spoiler. I'm not sure. So if you're wary about Cart Life spoilers, you know, maybe skip forward by about a minute. Sorry, are you guys sensitive about that? Like, do you mind me just sharing a story about how dark and grim this gets?
Go for it.
Okay, cool. So. I wasn't able to make rent. Like, just I think some guy came up and he was like, "Hey, let's I'm trying to sell bagels, but the place where I'm at, all they want is newspapers, and all anybody wants here is food. So let's trade our permits so we can, you know, get a little bit in a better situation." I was like, "Okay, cool. You know, like, trade it." And I couldn't figure out how to get my cart over to the new place, which was by a college campus. And so I was like looking around, and I was looking at my permit, and it was like non-transferable. Fuck, is that going to come to bite me? I'm not sure. I never found out. I went to the courthouse to try and get that, you know, trying to get that straightened out. They're like, "Take a number. There's nobody here. Take a number. Your number 22 is currently on, like, on number 2. And you have to sit there and watch as it cycles." And, like, I lost an entire day to this, an entire day of, like, when I could try and, you know, get enough money to make rent at this hotel that I'm staying at. And so I get back, and I'm like, "Okay, I need to get money. I'm just going to sell it. I'm going to sell stuff here. You know, without a license." Of course, cop comes up, takes the last of my money, and puts me in the hole. It's like, "Okay, what am I going to do?" I go in, I find, like, the place in the industrial district, like, you know, who makes cars. "Yeah, we can move that for, you know, $40. "Well, I don't have $40. Fuck. Then I go back, like, "Oh man, it's Monday. I don't have the rent. And I've got this cat, you know, like, you know, this character has a cat, but this hotel doesn't, you know, let cats in." So the landlord comes up and he's like, "Where's my money?" I was like, "I'm sorry, I don't have your, you know, I don't have your money." He was like, "Okay, I'm going to have to kick you out." And I was like, "Well, can I go back and get my things? And you can choose to admit if you have a cat or not." I was like, "Well, I need to go in and get my cat." And he flips out and he says, "You know what? I'm keeping the cat. You know, we have to say, you know, you're going to be fined. You know, we're going to have to clean this room, et cetera, et cetera." And one of the options is attack him with your pocket knife.
Yes.
And I really thought about hitting that button because I want my cat back. I want Mr. Glimbowski back. and I chose not to. And so I'm homeless. I don't have a way to run my business. My cat, like my one friend in this world, is gone. And I don't know where I'm going to sleep. And as I walk around, he's coughing because he's addicted to cigarettes. And I get the little screens that come up and say, "I wonder what I will be eating of today." It's him saying to himself, is funny. I'm so hungry that I'm not hungry anymore. It's like, oh God. And I quit. So
suddenly I'm very grateful for everything.
And I think that's the point. And I don't know if I would ever be able to play the other situation because you're a single parent in that one.
Oof. Yeah. Well, you've been playing a lot of really rough games, man.
I know, right? It's so sad. It's good. It's a free game. I mean, it's like it runs on Windows, and you just download it on the dude's site. It looks and plays amazingly. But yeah, it's real. It's really something. David, you were going to ask something.
This seems like an incredibly depressing game.
It is. I mean, it's Lemonade Stand, but with, you know, with commentary on what it's like to be impoverished in the United States, you know, as you do. Yeah, can't recommend it enough in terms of, like, effectively getting a message across through gameplay. It's tops. It's really good. Like, don't sleep on it if you have the ability to play it.
It sounds like a great perspective simulator.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah. So anyway, and then finally, Resident Evil 6.
On that kick, huh?
Yeah, still on that kick. At this point, I'm throwing good money after bad. But I beat Leon's scenario, and there were enough like narrative hooks at the end of it that was kind of like, oh, I want to find out the rest of the story, because you learn a little bit about the whole kind of like arc over everything, but like it leaves more questions than it answers, you know. And it you know, obviously playing the other scenarios is going to like, you know, like enlighten you on that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Chris's campaign because it was next on the menu, and the enemies that you fight with him, they end up basically, you remember like the last couple chapters of Resident Evil 4 where all of a sudden you're fighting military people and they're like firing guns back at you, and how like awful that was. That's what Chris's campaign is. Except, like, you know how in Resident Evil 4, if you shot somebody in the head, like the tentacle thing would come out?
Yeah.
The class of enemy that you're fighting, the Javo or whatever they are, it's any part of their body that you shoot that
something
mutates.
Will come out.
Yeah, yeah. So like if you shoot off an arm, it'll like grow a shield, like a shield arm. If you shoot off its legs, it'll get like grasshopper legs. If you shoot off the head, it'll get like wings that fly, you know, that pop out. And it's kind of like, oh man, so you can't kill an enemy without making it more of a nuisance, right?
Huh.
Really cool concept, though. I'm sad to hear that that's not fun.
It's like inverse Dead Space.
Kind of, yeah.
The idea is situational awareness, like, all right, what handicap do I want to give myself here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if maybe I'm at a positioning advantage, so I'll give them the grasshopper legs because I know I'm far enough away where that can help, or I'll give him the shield because I know I've got a precision weapon. I can shoot around it. Or that's like, what an awesome idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll give him the wings. That way I can make bird brain cracks.
Yeah, exactly. they're more like insects, though. Wow. Like, go ahead.
Like raid rage on things, though, and like uppercut boulders?
No. Like, it's a little bit. Yeah, the narrative is fine. Like I dig that. You know, I don't like Chris's sidekick in this mission, it's a thing. Man, I'm not even sure. I'm not even sure because you're right. But like the one strategy that works is just okay, shoot a dude in the torso, and that works. But like I'm worried that that's going to be taken away too. That like all of a sudden he becomes a, you know, this like torso monster, or like you blow away his stomach, and then he like the tissue like expands and becomes like really tall or something, you know. I'm not even sure.
Wait, so Sheva gone?
What?
Sheva?
She hasn't showed up anymore. And that's one of those things that like narratively I don't like. Where like these bioorganic weapons, the bows, you know, the zombies and stuff like that, they've become so common in the world of Resident Evil that there's a whole like wing of the military that is adapted to fighting them, the BSAA. And it's kind of like, okay, we've got full buy-in from the military on this. We've got all the equipment, blah, blah, blah. And like what was so awesome about, you know, Resident Evil's 1 through Code Veronica was like, holy crap, we have no idea what this is. There was this mystery around it. And like, you know, like it's kind of like, we gotta take out the tangos. They're, you know, recover our position. Like making it that kind of like giving it that those mundane trappings of a military shooter, you know, like, you know, just like literally you're supposed to be upset when this whole group of like, you know, Marines dies, you know, like hoorah, you know, kind of things. Like you didn't have any personality. You were trained to fight these things. You were here. You knew what was going to happen. Why would I feel sad about you dying? There's no characterization at all that's been given to you beyond like, and
none
so,
of them have cats.
I know, right? and it's just kind of like, man, that's so depressing. And like, they got back to like what was really cool in Leon's scenario, because, you know, not just because it was like regular zombies, but it was like a civilian area that was taken out, like that college campus. You know, it's kind of like, oh, awesome! It's like this, you know, great dark setting. You know, people are, you know, running around. They have no idea what's happening. It feels like a real catastrophe, and not like any other military shooter. And that's the bummer. That, you know, I don't mind when it gets action based, but just, man, don't give it these awful trappings that would immediately turn me off in any game, but it feels a little bit more insulting than it would be because it's in a series that I like, you know.
Resident Evil.
Well, I mean, it's sort of like Dead Space, you know, was, at least from what I saw, was hardcore in action game. I mean, you shot a lot of things and that's basically all you did.
Yeah.
They kept it, I mean, a truly, really, really creepy ass game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I've cranked the difficulty back to amateur, you know, I'm going for it. I just want to be done with it. But, it's not even like that long of a game, you know, each of the chapters in a given scenario takes about an hour. And you know, there are five chapters. So, you know, realistically with all four scenarios, it should be a 20-hour game, which is not insurmountable, but I can't shake it. And I know that if I go on to something else, I'll never come back to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I want to play Hitman, I want to play Dishonored, I want to play any number of these games, but I can't.
Got to whittle down that clog of yours.
Yeah, yeah.
Here.
All clogged up.
Cheek.
So, yeah, that's the grind. That's what I've been grinding on. I don't know.
Then you go play your kart simulator and realize, oh, that's not a bad problem to have.
Exactly, I know.
Multiplayer.
So it's time for the multiplayer. We apologize for not giving you enough time to answer this. If you didn't see it, literally when we started recording the show, you weren't able to get in. It's my it's my negligence that led to that. Dennis came up with a question and put it out there, and we have some answers. So, yes. Let's see here. What is this question? Dennis, I want to give you the honor.
Sure, why not? The question is, what game has your favorite unintended gameplay? And this is anything that's a lot of fun to do in the game that maybe the designers didn't necessarily put in there intentionally. So, David gave the example of RAR bombing in World of Warcraft. I thought of slap fights in Little Big Planet. Basically, the entirety of Grand Theft Auto is based around this principle. I've just got this world to play it in. I'm going to find my own random things that amuse me and do that. So
prostitute kinda volleyball.
Sure.
What is RAR bombing?
Basically, the druid class in World of Warcraft can turn to a bird and fly, and they can turn into a bear and charge at things. And the charging, it takes control and you kind of like warp, you know, at high speed to your enemy, so it negates fall damage.
Okay.
You go up into the sky and exit out of your bird form, and as you're falling, shapeshift into a bear, and at the last moment before hitting the ground, charge an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, from the enemy's perspective, you know, it's more or less OMFG, bear out of the sky.
It's like the equivalent of base jumping.
Right.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Exactly, World of Warcraft base jumping.
Hmm.
That sounds terrifying. Can you imagine if a flying bear came after you?
The bear astronauts have gone ape crap. Yeah. Sorry. Brad Neely, it's real funny stuff. So anyway, let's see here. Oh man, I navigated away from the page. I'm terrible at this. No. So let's see here. Brian Russell Wade says, pairing your jolly cooperation partners in Dark Souls. So I'm not certain if that means like somebody who's like doing co-op with you or anybody who invades your world. But yeah, pairing is kind of its own metagame in Dark Souls. I was watching a video like where somebody was doing like frame counts on like exactly when in every weapon type you like are able to parry with that. Like, yeah, it's a real something. But the way you're saying it is kind of like, okay, I come into your world to help you out and we practice parrying on each other, which is where, you know, you take something in your offhand while somebody's attacking, you press it at the exactly right time and you deflect it, you know, giving you an opening to attack.
So can you,
or
can you
alternately giving your enemies an opening to attack your supposed friend?
Exactly.
When you're engaging in jolly cooperation, can you attack each other without consequence?
Nope. Still has consequence. So, I mean, it's a high stakes game. Yeah.
Should be real, yo.
Yeah.
Yeah. How much can I grief my teammate without causing him to cease to be my teammate?
Yeah. So I mean, it sounds kind of like you guys gave your answers, you know, with the slap fighting and the raw or bombing.
Actually, not.
Yeah, actually, those were just examples. We both got one.
Yeah, I can do mine, and then sure. we'll continue through. Mine is actually from the original Assassin's Creed.
There was fun things to do in that game.
You had to search for them, but they were at least hours with my brothers playing this game and laughing hysterically, just standing at the top of a flight of stairs and throwing people down. So, you know, there's I forget what button it is, but it's essentially a grab move that's its primary function is to get people out of your way, right? And you kind of grab them and throw them off to the side. But if you do that at the top of a flight of stairs, you send them just tumbling down the flight of stairs.
does it count as attacking a person with the thing?
Never got into trouble for doing it. That's the best part. Ah. So we almost do like a bowling game.
Wait till there's people at the bottom of the stairs and try and knock them all down.
Exactly. And it's like, and all the funny like ragdoll physics animations come out and it just becomes hilarious. It was highly, highly amusing. So I probably spent way more time doing that in the game than I would care to admit, because there's no reward for doing it except for the hilarity.
Yeah. The town folk are just glad the escalators haven't been bad.
I mean, there's an element of self-imposed challenge in that too. I mean, and that could be its own category of this. But I remember in Assassin's Creed 2, I was so in love with something really similar to that, which is like the actual combat throw that you can do on people. You know, throwing people off of roofs is really, really, really fun.
Oh, yeah. The right? Archers.
Yeah, just anything. So I would say like, okay, this mission, no attacking. All I do is throw people off roofs. So like, you know, no swords, no hidden blades, you know, no kings nor gods, just me on top of some roofs throwing people to the ground.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. Let me look here.
I'm kind of sad because I tried looking up a video of knocking people downstairs in Assassin's Creed and I could not find one.
World found as much joy in this. Very, very small target market there.
So could I say somebody's next? I kind of have a good segue.
Yes.
Okay.
Do that.
Geolaw happened to mention different things that you could do in Halo, the original Halo. And one of the things he talked about was warthog jousting and blood gulch.
Yep.
Oh, and
yes.
So now I'm not sure how he played it. The variant we would always play is you have two people in the Warthog, person's sidecar has a rocket launcher, and then as you pass by, they try and shoot the other person in the rocket launcher, and then if anybody falls out, you try and run them over. That was how I played it. Did you guys play differently, or
that sounds like a good variant.
We tried it with the Sentinel laser in 2, but didn't quite. Or not the Sentinel laser, but didn't quite work.
No.
Yeah, that's got too much pepper on it.
This is too much pepper.
That was Halo 3, though. I believe, though, right?
No, I'm not the Spartan. The little like I just ripped this laser off the robot thing.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Where it's like the annoying beam.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a great side game, and that kind of segue into one of the things that I love to do. A side game was pretty much anything in Halo 2 Online. All the different variants of games that you could play there. The one that stands out in my mind is we would play zombies games.
Yeah.
Where did you guys ever do this? Where you have a red team and you have a green team, and there's one person on the green team with a sword, and then there's a bunch of people on the red team with pistols, and there's no shields. And so the green person's a zombie. He gives everybody a minute to kind of fortify wherever they want to stay on the map, and then he goes hunting. And if you get killed by the zombie, you change to the green team, and you play until there's only green team left. And that was just a lot of fun. I remember, I forget the name of the level, but it was one of the square levels with air vents on either end of it and turrets on either end of it. And then there was like kind of four rooms in the corners that were easily fortified.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, so playing that map and then just pushing all the objects to the entrance of one of those rooms and having everybody just aim their pistols at the door. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of fun. So
yeah,
I have fond memories of things like that in Halo. So
yeah.
Mine actually was also from Halo, so should I just go?
Hit it.
All right. Do you guys remember Forge mode at all?
Yes. Halo 3.
Yeah. Basically, you know, you could either, in this mode, it was designed for, you know, sort of customizing levels. So you could either play as the Spartan, where you ran around with full access to guns and stuff like that. Or you played as, I guess, the little central robots, I think it was, which allowed you to fly. You could pick up objects, and you could also create objects. So the intended purpose of the mode was for you to, you know, build these levels together. However, what we ended up doing is turning it into this sort of deathmatch variant. Because you could shoot and kill people when you're in Spartan mode. On the other hand, when you were in, I'm sorry, Dennis's cat is Assassin's Creed. But on the other hand, when you're as the Sentinel, you could materialize a tank in midair and throw it at people.
Seems legit.
Yeah.
We're constantly shifting between like Spartan mode and, you know, firing the submachine gun at a Sentinel, and then, you know, as he goes to throw a tank at you know, switching back into, you know, central mode, flying above the incoming tank and countering with your own warthog or whatever.
Yeah.
I parry with a warthog.
Let's see here. We've got some live action happening here because somebody is putting in their own example here.
Can I just say that Geolaw also mentions fighting in hockey games, which I had completely forgotten how much I love that.
Yeah,
I would play. It was like NHL 2K1 or something like that, and with the express purpose of starting and winning fights.
Yeah, yeah.
I got into something like, you know, I think I would. You had to set it so that you didn't get ejected after a certain number of fights.
Red card.
Yeah. It, yeah. High score of how many fights could I get into by the end?
Yeah, NHL 94 had a pretty good fighting mechanic to it too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like fights in hockey are like crashes in NASCAR. God, did I just like invoke NASCAR in something? It's like this rare thing that when it happens, you're like, awesome blood, and then somebody gets their, you know, throat cut with a skate, you know, because why not? Speaking of skates, Gary Butterfield says, jousting and Tony Hawk, create a line, two players, charge. Because why not? Yeah. Like Tony Hawk to me, it seems kind of like Halo in that it's that, you know, make your own fun kind of feel, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's kind of like, okay, we have this world and we have like a couple of things we can do and we can, you know, set our own rules that aren't really enforced by the system that's around us. But, you know, we just have to be a couple people in a room or a couple of people in this kind of area. Let's just see how it goes. And so you're kind of like playing make believe. You're playing pretend, right?
Yeah, it's amazing. I think I said this, how many of these I relate to, like the warthog jousting, the Tony Hawk jousting, the hockey fighting. Like all of these are things I have done. Things that like are completely not intended to be focuses of the game, yet these are the things that we remember. It's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. Well,
think about half of them boil down to those times when co-op mode fails and you just start griefing the guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Murph Murphy says, remember room 2C in Zelda A Link to the Past? Yes, I do. in the first dungeon in the World of Light, basically it's a room where balls come at you from all directions. For some reason, I really liked that room and spent like 15 minutes just dodging the balls, weaving in and out. Not sure why, but it was really incredibly satisfying. He includes a picture, an image, a map of this. And yes, I have a vague recollection of this being fun. Yeah, just kind of like the whole, like, I wonder how long I could stay alive if I kind of impose these rules on myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this just shows how much better at Zelda he is than I was. That room where I died repeatedly.
Yeah. Can I share mine?
Yes. Sure.
There's a phenomenon that was called out in a Something Awful article a long while back. I want to say, like, you know, 6, 7, maybe 8 years ago now. It was kind of like, oh, that's what that's called. That's what that thing is, and that phenomenon is called asshole physics.
Yeah.
And like any game that has non-aggressive NPCs, and also it gives you the freedom to pick things up and throw them, and it has the physics engine to kind of support that. And they also program in responses. Like, where people can say, hey, cut it out. Why are you doing this to me? Don't just stop it. So I'm picturing the Ur example for me is Half-Life 2, like the opening of that, where you can pick up the can and throw it at guards.
Yeah.
Or just throw it at civilians. And like you can do it like later on. You know? Yeah, that is great. Also happens in Skyrim. Just any game where that kind of thing happens. So I was going to come up with like a lame example of like, oh, whenever I go somewhere, I jump. It's like, that's pretty like vanilla, but no, just if I can make a computer man's life miserable with mischief, like stop hitting yourself. Yeah. That's a fun little game to play.
See, I just remember dying. I tried to use that to fight the guards in Half-Life Half-Life 2.
Yeah. So on weeks where we actually remember to put out these things on time, that was my fault again. I am so sorry. You can check out the Facebook group and also the various Twitters and tutors that we have. You know, watch out for those, and you can participate and be featured on this program, because why not? And bosses.
Watch out for
tutors. Watch out for toots.
The end boss.
And bosses, where we just kind of give our final thoughts, Jerry Springer style. Again, because why not? Does anybody want to volunteer to go first?
I do have one, which is about this amazing, I'd call it a bastion, but that's not the right word, of civility. The internet that is the Polygon website.
Uh-huh.
For I don't know what it is, must be something in the water, but the comment section of the Polygon website is the most polite, forgiving, and thoughtful community that I have ever seen in an online space. And it just astounds me to read the comment section on any article that they write. And they've done stuff on like violence in video games and religion in video games and like all these different topics. And people are just so, so nice to each other there that I almost wonder if it's a cult.
I don't know, man. Sounds kind of lame. I like to grief people. Get on there on Reddit and just lay some smackdowns on people. Call them slurs, you know, for various ethnicities and affiliations and orientations, you know, whatever. No big.
That's what we call it. Friday nights, me and Jimmy go out slurring.
We got there and we serve up some slurry, because why not? God.
But yeah, it's actually, I mean, on a serious note, it's kind of cool to see. But I don't know if it's just really heavily moderated or what, but the only thing I've ever seen from the Polygon comment section is just respect and thoughtful discussion, and it gives me hope for humanity.
Mm-hmm. Yep. In general, the when you're making a comment on something, just pause and ask yourself, is this necessary? Am I contributing something? Am I being a jerk? If the answer to any of those questions is either no or yes, depending on what it is, if the answer to your yes or no question is no or yes, don't do it or do it. The level.
That gem, Cole. I think I might cross stitch that and put it up.
I always wanted one of my words to be featured on a pillow.
So. It's going to have to be a body pillow from that quote.
As you do. You know, I've got a couple. Not a couple. I'll just do the one. So anyway. I have discovered over this past week, you know, like I said, I was traveling, and, you know, people say that, like, oh, air travel or, you know, it's any kind of situation is a great place to do, like, handheld gaming, you know, like I brought my DS. I have my iPhone. I can't do portable gaming outside of my house, y'all.
I'm so exposed.
Like, I don't know. Like, I couldn't concentrate on it. It was just kind of like, I don't know if there was too much stimulation out there in the world around me or what. So I probably play more DS in my bed than I ever would play it, like, outside, to the point where I wonder why I bother carrying it. So that's a little bit of soul searching for me. How about you, Ben?
The only thing I have on my mind is getting my PlayStation 3 back and maybe starting a game in New Vegas. I don't know.
Yes.
But
is playing
something.
Is that, like, on its way? Like, I mean, are you, like, how long are you going to be like without it?
I will get it either between Thursday and Sunday. I have a voicemail which probably says the exact day, but I have not listened to it yet.
David.
If completely unrelated to video games, but still cool.
No, that's fine. This is anything goes.
Sure. If you've got Netflix, anything like that, do yourself a huge favor and look up Whisker Wars. Reality TV is basically find completely normal people doing completely boring things and make a TV show out of it. Whereas this is find completely crazy people doing completely over the top things and make it TV show out of it. It's basically a reality TV style documentary thing on professional beard competitions. So people who grow their beards and compete in one of several categories, such as mustache, full beard, or freestyle. Understand freestyle until you see the German fellow with the octopus beard, American, who, or rather, no, the Swiss fellow who has his beard shaped into a reindeer and the Swiss flag.
Because those things go together.
The people with, you know, giant red beards down to their waist talking about how, you know, bearding is going to be the next big thing, and they're, you know, really trying to get it to go mainstream.
Bearding, isn't that when a patient lady, like, marries a gay dude so he can, like, be a school principal?
No, I mean, it very blatantly taps into the just, like, basic human, like, I like watching people be people thing, but at least these people are rather entertaining.
Yeah, that's wow. Huh. I had never seen this show until this weekend. My 7-year-old niece, she loves Cake Boss.
Ooh.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, the Italian gentleman who owns a bakery in New Jersey. She is in love with the show. It was all that she wanted to watch, and it's on Netflix. It's so weird it's a weird thing for her to just be transfixed by. I don't know if I should be worried about it or what.
Future Baker there. That's one of those faux reality shows, though, right? Where they really kind of set up all the.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe it seems real. Like, you know, they've got clients and stuff like that. But this is my theory, because that's the whole genre, the cake genre, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure.
And I've seen one or two of them, and watching a bunch of episodes in succession this weekend, really kind of hammered it home. So in this half hour or hour long show, the most compelling thing is when they are trying to transport the cakes. So like, we've made this cake that is a scale model of the Kowloon walled city, you know, and it's like, awesome. It's great. Now it needs to be at this wedding. They load it in the back of the truck and they're watching it like, oh, we're going to carry it up the flight of stairs. So here's my, you know, like my, it's the Lucky Charm problem. Why isn't there a cereal that is all marshmallows? And why isn't there a cake show that is entirely about moving cakes?
Or people failing at moving cakes.
Well, there'll be heartbreaks. There'll be triumphs. I just want to say, you know, it's like really get inside the cake moving, you know, scene. You know, we got a lot of young up and comers. You know, there's some bad blood. There are rivalries. I don't even know. A crossover between Whisker Wars and Cake Movers, Whisker Movers. I don't know.
You're in it.
Yeah, we actually had one of those cake people come to the robotics team because they on like channel, they're having some competition for what is it, like RuPaul
the transvestite.
That's a person.
Yes, that is an individual. Yes,
like so, you know, the machine, like Wile E. Coyote.
RuPaul device.
A RuPaul machine. Yes.
Okay. No, a Rube Goldberg device, yeah.
Yeah.
Can we call it a RuPaul machine from now on?
Yes, we can.
RuPaul 2016.
and the Fed. Anyway, so is the cake RuPaul machine?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. On this, are we in the game podcast?
What's that?
What the fuck happened?
For this late.
The credit. Oh God.
Well,
oh,
we tied up all the loose ends
with a nice little bow.
Oh.
In a pretty little package. Yeah. So. Credits?
Yeah.
So that was The Level, a show about transsexual cakes, I guess. I don't even know. What can you do? You can go to duckfeed.tv. There you can find all of the various and sundry information about our program, including our iTunes listing, where you can rate us and review us. We'll say our Twitters here towards the end. You can like us on Facebook. That is facebook.com/TheLevelPodcast, where you can participate in our multiplayer questions and just kind of pal around and listen to the things we got to say. You know?
Thank you, Facebook community, that we had like three answers in 30 minutes of a multiplayer question that had no advance warning. That's like, what a great community. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, you guys rise to the call. And we really appreciate your attention and your care. Other shows on the network you can check out. You can check out The Pitch, which is a really funny bite-sized comedy podcast that is done by our friend and colleague here at the network, Gary Butterfield. Our new program, if you want to hear anything and everything related to Dark Souls, it's called Bonfire Side Chat. The next episode's going up this Sunday. It's going to feature Zach from the Video Games Hot Dog and Advice Hot Dog podcasts.
Nice.
Yeah. And there's always the old standby, watch out for fireballs. You know, it's good. It's good stuff. And all the various subscribing stuff like that. You know the deal. You know what we'd like you to do. Go to Amazon.com/tipjar. Not Amazon, fuck. Duckfeed.tv/tipjar and use our Amazon link there. If you're going to be buying stuff on Amazon, use that link, add stuff to your cart, buy it, and then we get a little kickback, and that helps us host this program as it gets more popular and more expensive to put out. That's a fantastic way to support us. Dennis, you were going to say something?
I was just going to say, I feel like even though we changed our name, this is the oldest podcast on the network, so we have a right to complain about all these new podcasts on our lawn scuffing.
Yes. We've been around for a while. We've been doing this for a while. This group especially. So thank you very much if you've been with us from the beginning, and if you are just now joining us, welcome to the fold. We will try not to frighten you too much, despite the past couple of minutes, you know. So yes, by way of kind of introduction and also saying goodbye, I'm Cole Ross. You can find me at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I'm Dennis Furia at DFuria on Twitter.
David Meismith at MoneySmith777.
Ben Merkel at Merkelizer.
Yeah.
Word.
That's the level. Thank you. We dig it. We hope you dig it too.
Doug.
And the Fed. I don't like this anymore. Let's stop.
You sound like Lemonhead.
What? Oh, you mean Lemon Grab?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry. Okay. That's right. A joke for laughs. So my laugh. Congrats. I feel like my laugh has stagnated a little bit. So I'm considering switching over to Jeff Goldblum's laugh from Jurassic Park.
What's that?
Give us an example.
It's kind of like the muttering slightly.
You kind of need more like, or like, you know, a little bit of those in there.
Yeah.
Amp up the crazy cool.
You know, that's actually a thing, is that if you are around someone with a different laugh that you like, or admire or whatever, you'll start to take on their laugh. Or just like, if you decide to change the way you laugh, it'll actually happen over time. It will become natural. maybe workshop that one a little bit and okay. Get back.
It's supposed to be unsettling. God damn it.